Thank you for coming here on relatively short notice. As you know, there are no secrets in government, and our budget was released earlier than we were planning. But there it is, and we'll do the best we can to explain, elaborate on exactly what it is. I want to just explain a couple of things about this chart. I've got my little microphone so I can walk around. Is that on? Okay. Anyway, all these budget numbers are a little confusing. But the big thing is this. We had a structural deficit of $20 billion. And that's been around for a while. We've taken that from $20 billion to around $5 billion. By structural deficit, we mean all things being equal, how does it look every year? And the way it looked was we were going to have a deficit in a couple of years of $21 billion. And then this year would have had almost $20 billion again. So we've done a lot of cutting. That's the big thing, the big takeaway from this. We've got the structural deficit down. Now, it just so happens that if we don't do anything, we'll have a budget this year deficit of 9.2. That's a function of we didn't get the Medi-Cal cuts. There's some revenue disappointments. So it's a little bigger, but those are all unexpected things. Next year, if we don't do anything, things get a little better. We're down to about the 5, and then we're down to about 2.9. With the tax program, we will eliminate the budget deficit, finally, after years of kicking the can down the road, and we'll begin to pay back the wall of debt. And that's one thing I'm really committed to. We see what's going on in Europe. We see the pathetic fiscal state of Greece, and there's no doubt it is possible for a government to dig such a hole that you can't climb out without social turmoil and even breakdown. So that's why I'm going to push very hard to take the money that we're going to receive this year and also the tax measure and eliminate our deficit and then pay down the wall of debt so that we're in much solider fiscal shape. Now, going forward, because we're going to assume that we're going to get the temporary income tax and the temporary sales tax, we have to put in trigger cuts. Otherwise, the budget would not be balanced, would not be financeable. So the key point here is not only are we putting in some big cuts, we're cutting welfare by almost $1.5 billion. We're making some very painful reductions. A mother and kids are getting the same welfare check in real dollars that they got in the 80s. Same for the elderly, the blind, the disabled, the child care cuts. This is not nice stuff, but that's what it takes to balance the budget, and that's assuming we get our tax revenues. If we don't get the tax revenues, then in the introduction, if you go to page 11, you'll see where the trigger cuts. And they're to schools, they're to courts, they're to the university, and they're to some state public safety services. So the good news is California is recovering. The fiscal health of the state is improving. And we now have a plan that returns government closer to the people, number one. Number two, it balances the budget. Number three, it pays down debt. And I think people in California can feel more confident that they know about their state finances. Same time, we are going to have some bold moves, investments in high-speed rail and in water, greenhouse gas reduction, alternative energy. So we're not going to just stay put. This is not a stand-pat plan here. This is a strong, confident investment in the future of California. There are a few people, some of them, you know, who are hankering after life in Texas, who call California the failed state. We are the innovative state. We're the state of Apple Computer, of Facebook, of Hewlett-Packard, of Hollywood, of stem cell research, international trade, diversity. This is a state that's dynamic, it's creative, and it's prosperous. This year, we're adding about $90 billion in new revenue to the gross state product. But we got our challenges. We got our problems. And this is an honest budget that is got started a little earlier than I expected. But I think it's a good sign of things to come. We can't wait. The people can't wait. Let's get it done. Let's get the taxes, the cuts, and California will be in a better spot. I'll take any questions.
Could you talk, your deficit number is $9.2 billion. Yeah. A good portion of that is the current year. I'm just wondering, after a year being governor, can you talk about what that's like to find missing the mark, even by some $4 billion?
Well, you miss the mark if the federal government will let you make your Medi-Cal cuts. And we have to go back on bended knee and beg to be able to implement the Medi-Cal reductions that the legislature approved. So that's one piece of it. The other is some of the revenue. It's uncertain. I mean, what if the euro falls apart and Europe goes into a deep recession? That will affect our revenues. And those uncertainties, the ups and downs of the capitalist economy, are just what we have to put up with.
I asked the question because last year you also called it an honest budget. Some people would look at that and go, $4 billion.
No, it's an honest budget, but we're not. It's not a fortune-telling budget. We don't have clairvoyance at the Department of Finance. We probably need a little clair. Or we don't have remote viewing either, if you know what that is. So anyway, now I want. Did I fully explain the cut? Besides cuts, there were some revenue adjustments. What? The problem was worse than we thought. Also, we had...
Before you came in. So 10-11 is $1.9 billion worse than we knew in June. So that accounts for...
Remember, budget work is an art, not a science. And we do our best. And everybody, even the legislative analyst, has a different view than the Department of Finance. And that's just the way it is. We're in the ballpark. And the ballpark is that we've cut the structural deficit substantially. And we now have the possibility of eliminating, over the next several years, the deficits that have plagued California. But there's a big if. We've got to hold the line on spending and make the tough cuts or something equivalent to what I put in this budget. And it's going to be very difficult for the legislature to adopt some of these cuts. I think to put on the trigger cuts will also be difficult, but without them, we can't put together the balanced budget.
Governor, could you?
Positions being cut through, do you see the 15,000 positions being cut through attrition or through layoffs? And also, can you say if the tax measure fails, do you have to suspend Prop 98?
First of all, the reduction, I don't know that there's been any layoffs yet. We have people moving. For example, in corrections, we have people moving from Pelican Bay to other prisons throughout the state, and they're collaborating in spreading out the work when there are reductions. In terms of the 98, if the taxes, no, we won't. The cuts will happen. By the way, 98 will go down automatically if the revenues don't materialize. So 98 is a function of the revenues that come in. And the revenues that come in are lower than we project, and we're projecting the taxes pass, then 98 goes down and the schools get cut.
I wanted to ask you about your approach to class size reduction. Do you eliminate the penalty on school districts that cannot comply? Can you talk a little bit about why you're going in that direction?
Because we want, yes, I want schools to have more authority to make their own decisions. And this is the inherent dilemma of having a state and local governments. Or local school districts. To the extent that we have preferences, then we have to micromanage the local decision makers, namely the school board, the superintendent, and the principals. My general philosophy is that we should be giving more discretion to counties, to cities, and to school districts. That means if they think they can save some money by adding a few kids to a class instead of something else, then they can do that. That's their choice. I have confidence that the local democracy is at least as vigorous and as responsive as our statewide democracy, even though it might be different. And I know there are a lot of people who want the people in Kern to be just like the people in San Francisco, and therefore we create a state standard, mandate, prescription, and you got to do it our way or the highway. There is another approach, and that is let a thousand flowers bloom. Let Kern County be Kernites, and let the Modokians be Modokians, and let the San Francisco School District do what they do, which is different in many cases. So we will have a core of civil rights, of fundamental core requirements, but instead of 60 categorical programs, we want to reduce it as much as possible.
All the most popular programs. So
is this the Washington Monument kind of thing?
K-12, higher ed, public safety. Yeah. Some might say that's a politically driven decision. How would you respond?
You know, I'll tell you, I asked Anna, I said, is this the Washington Monument kind of cut? And she said, no. Can you explain that, Anna? Because I can't. What is it? Yeah, explain that. Well, that's where the money is, I guess.
I mean, schools account for 40% of general fund expenditures. So when closing a budget, schools would roughly account for 40% of expenditures if all reductions are proportional. The budget itself protects education. So what's left in balancing the balance of the problem, once CalWORKs has been cut by $1 billion, once childcare has been cut by $500 million, once, you know, corrections is already reduced by $1.1 billion, these are the areas that are protected. Thus, these are the areas that are reduced.
So, Governor, this was not a political
calculus. And by the way, to try to cap Medi-Cal, we didn't even succeed this year. You've got to get permission from the federal government. We get sued all the time. We just were sued just this week again on Medi-Cal cuts. So we think we're going to get the waivers, or most of them eventually. But those trigger cuts are where we thought credibly we could get the money.
The numbers are the numbers. No politics at all went into framing your initiative debate.
No,
this schools versus tax.
These numbers emanate from the bowels of the finance department bureaucracy. And as those emanations float into the governor's office, then I get them. And I did ask her the very question you told me. And they said, that's where the money is. You know, as Willie Sutton said, when asked why he robbed banks, he said, that's where the money is. Education is a lot where the money is, and if you don't have money, it comes out of schools. That's what's been happening. I don't like to see it that way. I certainly don't like to see it coming from the university. I really would like to find a way to get more money back there and cut out these tuition increases.
Governor, back here. So can you address poor Californians, why this budget targets them once again? You're cutting welfare from 4 years to 2 years, cutting welfare grants for kids for $71 a month, cutting out 71,000 slots for child care. Why?
Because the state of California government is a very generous, compassionate political jurisdiction. And when we have to reduce our spending, that spending is going to come from programs that are doing good in schools, in health care, in all the other areas that constitute public service. So obviously that's the only thing to cut. If there were more bad programs or lower valued programs, we'd cut those. We can't spend what we don't have. And that's the problem. It's not nice. We don't like it. But the economy and the tax statutes of California make just so much money available, and we have to spend it and make hard decisions between the university, which we've cut massively, $750 million. The prisons we're cutting back a billion. We're letting out, we're reducing the population by 35,000 or more prisoners. I mean, the California government is under stress. We're spending in real terms, that is the dollars in relationship to our wealth, what we were in the 70s under Ronald Reagan. So we're doing the best we can, and it is a hardship, and it is a burden, and I'd much rather that it not happen. And that's why I am proposing the half-cent sales tax temporarily and the tax on millionaires temporarily on the high-income tax earners to try to mitigate these cuts that are even part of the budget with or without the tax.
But why not ask for more?
Unemployment insurance fund, you got it down for $417 million. Is that, once again, borrowing money from somebody, the disability insurance fund?
Yes.
Why don't you propose an increase in the unemployment insurance tax? That thing is $10 billion in the hole right now.
Well, I think it takes a two-thirds vote. I didn't do so well on proposing a tax last time around. So we have to figure something out, whether it's taxes or benefit changes.
Isn't this adding to your wall of debt?
That's why I want to pay down other bricks in the wall, so we'll have a little more room for some of the ones we can't quite eliminate. I mean, this is the way it is. I mean, this is not like I can make the oceans go back. You cannot make the Republicans vote to increase taxes on businesses right now. I don't think so. Now, if they want to come forward and tell me about it, I'm certainly welcome. I just ran into Berryhill this afternoon, and he says he's got some very expensive wine that he wants to share with me. So I will bring this point up with him. But my hunch is that this year borrowing will be a better way to manage our finances.
By the same token, you also have $630 million in loan payment extensions. Does that not just exacerbate the wall of debt?
We're paying down the wall of debt, but we also have to make use of our borrowing capacity internally. There is no other way. Unless you want me to cut more kids out of child care, more mothers off of social service, or more higher tuition. I mean, we're in a box in the state of California. We have more needs, desires, and demands than the money available. So we have to now reduce needs, reduce demands, reduce desires. Some of that will be cuts. Some of that will be borrowings. Some of that will be one-time measures. And some of that will be taxes. It's a balance. This, based on my experience, is the best I can put together. The legislation will take a look at it. And if they find a better way to do it, well, then they'll make those adjustments in the budget. But I defy anybody in this room to make any major changes that will be any more politically palatable than the ones I've made. I'm not saying this is perfect. I'm just saying that this is the best that our finance department and myself can come up with. And I certainly would welcome you, Dan, because you've been around here longer than I have, to make in your columns a couple of suggestions how we might proceed in a more politically productive way. So I want to get the critique and get the solution, and I promise you, if you have an idea I can get through the legislature and I agree with it, I will implement it.
Governor?
Yes.
Daryl Steinberg said yesterday that he didn't even really want to talk about cuts until at least May to give time to see what the revenues might do, if they might continue to improve. And then even then, cuts as a last, really a last option. Why not take that approach, and what can you say to him to convince
him? Because then the cuts will have to be bigger. If we don't make the cuts sooner, then you build up the deficit, and when you finally have to pay the piper, you have to pay more. I mean, the fact is, government passes a lot of spending programs, and these spending programs attempt to do good, whether it's child care or education or the university or policing or whatever. Now, when you say we don't have enough money, you got to cut some of that good, and that's what we're doing. We got to bite the bullet.
You want some of this to be implemented before June?
Yes, I want the cuts to be some to be in March.
What do you want to be done before June?
I'll let Anna say. How much do we want to get major cuts by then?
Major cuts by then,
counting
IHSS cuts, efficiencies, and other proposals.
I don't think people are going to want to do some of this. And that's why my predecessors had even more borrowing and kicking the can. I mean, we're doing the best we can, and it's going to be very hard. What I've laid out is going to be very hard to digest in this building. But we're going to do our best. And at the end of the day, they got to put a budget in front of me that I can sign. And that requires a certain credible, disciplined program. And that's what I'm going to be pushing for between now and the time I get the budget back.
How much sooner than June do you want those cuts to?
In March.
In March, okay.
It's all laid out in the budget when we need it.
Well, on that measure, I mean, March 1st is some of these that Anna laid out to us earlier.
Yep.
And that is a very tough deadline in years past. I mean, people have said cuts don't happen, then we go back to a plan B. What do you do? I mean, you've got to use the force of...
I'll try my best, but, you know, this is an operation of, you know, so many Democrats, so many Republicans, and they're a co-equal branch, and they decide things based on their best judgment. But I can tell you the best thinking from the executive branch is that this budget is a good roadmap to get us through to a solid fiscal program that we can all live with. Nobody's going to like it, but if they don't vote for it this way, they'll have to vote for it another way. And there's only so much modification that I'm going to be prepared to accept as the ultimate arbiter, which is my signature on the budget.
What kind of welfare cut do you want? Do you want actual cuts in the grants, or do you want to reduce eligibility? How do you want that to happen?
We are reducing eligibility. We're reducing child care.
We reduce grants for those.
We're going to take the time limits from 4 years down to 2 years. And I think that's about it. You can get from Anna more details on that. But, you know, this is tough medicine. But without it, we will return to the years of obfuscation and a growing of the wall of debt, which I want to take down. I want to lower, not increase. Yeah.
So with the pain, do you expect the public to embrace your tax initiative even more?
Well, I hope they will, because this is all we can do. I mean, if there's a better way to do it, I'm totally open to it. If members of the public can show me a better path, then fine. But after having looked at all the numbers, these are the trigger cuts. These are the cuts in the current in the budget I'm proposing, and these are the taxes. That's it. I can't figure out a better way. And I have to tell you, there are not a lot of people around here who've spent as much time thinking about government cuts and taxes than I have. And I'm not trying to kid anybody. I'm just saying this is the best I can do. But they got to agree. And if they don't agree, well, then we'll deal with that when it happens.
So, Governor, upstairs, the pro tem has talked about legalizing gambling online and wants to act quick on that. Doesn't look like there's any revenue reflective of that in the budget. Do you think it's feasable for 12-13, or is it?
Are you talking about online internet poker?
Yeah.
That's a measure that's being debated. I'd rather not comment on that. But I would be skeptical that there's huge amounts of revenue in that, although there certainly could be some.
Governor, yeah. I'm curious on the trigger cuts. Like, biggest chunk is to higher ed and K-12. Almost as an afterthought, you have like wardens and park rangers and 600 some lifeguards. Why did you lump them into the trigger rather than have them cut in the regular budget?
Because those are more drastic cuts. We do make some cuts in the budget. These are just more drastic. Because after you make all the cuts, then you say, what's the next level of cuts in case the people don't vote for the taxes? Because this budget is based on the assumption the taxes pass. If the taxes fail, then we have to be able to immediately put in place reductions. These are our best judgment. If the people in the legislature can get better trigger cuts, you know, I'll be glad to look at them. This is the best that we can figure out. And as you see, when you get down to the smaller numbers, you could come up with others. When you get to the big ones, like schools, Prop 98, or the university, those are very hard to replace.
But it just seems like you're really hammering on public safety there with wardens, rangers, and lifeguards. They are direct responsible for the public safety in these venues. And why are you going after
Well, we were very careful about that. I think it includes lifeguards, but not other public safety personnel. Well, we had to look somewhere. I mean, this is the question. What other areas of the budget could we have looked at? We've already cut parks. We've got 70 parks closed. I mean, this is all, it's not like this is all first time. We've been cutting for the last couple of years, and this is our best cut. And as I say, if the legislature wants to take $1 million out of here and take it out of somewhere else, they can do that. But this is our considered judgment after weighing all the pros and cons.
Governor, your cuts to education, either the ones you're proposing immediately or those in the triggers, would those go on the so-called credit card to be paid back later, or would those be actual permanent reductions in spending?
Because the money wouldn't be there, right? Because if the money's not there, the 98 guarantee goes down. So they disappear.
So this $544 million you have in Prop 98, that's an
lowering
of the obligation from the state. That's not a credit card situation? Okay.
Development, are you open to negotiating with cities to extend their life for a few more months?
Our position is that the Supreme Court has invalidated the AB 27 and that we're left with AB 26, and that's the way it stands. I know that people have concerns about economic development and housing, and I'll be glad to hear whatever thoughts people can bring forward. But remember, we cut out redevelopment, not because I dislike redevelopment. I don't exactly. But we are short of money, and we're just saying core services trump the redevelopment program. So that's where we are. And if people want to add back spending, they're going to have to find out where do we find that substitute? Because if we have to finance redevelopment, we got to get the money from somebody.
Governor,
that's the trouble. We're in a box, and it's very hard for people to look at the whole picture. People would rather look at, well, let's look at child care, or let's look at housing, or redevelopment, or something else. Fact is, we got to look at the whole picture. We got so much money. We got so much spending. We got to make the two balance. We haven't done that for years and years. I'm telling you, we can now do it if we follow this path. It's not a pleasant path. It's not wine and roses. It's a very prickly path that we're looking here, and it's going to be difficult to get people to vote for it.
Governor?
Yeah. What?
At the end of this budget, if it's approved, how large is the workforce reduction going to be in state government?
Well, it looks that we have 15,000.
15,000, and then plus what's in this year, correct?
I guess so.
Is it?
I don't have the number right off the top, but it's 15,000 already. It'll be bigger because things like corrections and it's phased in. There'll be thousands of positions.
So are we getting close to the 40,000 that Whitman had talked about during the election campaign?
I don't know. Well, we're also investing because we're going to need people in water and other programs. But
our positions are already down; and they'll be going down some more. We'll follow up with a specific amount.
One more question, please.
No, there's a big difference between my opponent's program and mine. If that's the point of your question, we wouldn't be here. I mean, things would have been a whole other story. Yeah.
With all the challenges facing you for this year, how would you characterize the upcoming political season, including the presidential race? You've got all the initiatives out there. How would you characterize this coming season?
Well, how would I characterize the political season? Exciting, challenging, turbulent, unpredictable. Those would be my first cut at adjectives. I think it'll be worthy of the challenge. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy for the president. It's not going to be easy for America. It's not easy for California. One of the items, if you see buried in the budget here, that is very concerning about the demographics of California. Retirees, the number of retirees will increase 15%. The number of children will increase, 2%? So there's a 5 times difference between the people retiring and the people coming along. And there's a lesser gap between the people entering the workforce and the people entering the retiree population. So when everything else is said and done, we're going to have to get more productive. We're going to have to use technology. We're going to have to cooperate more. Because a lot of people can talk about regulations or they can talk about taxes. But at the end of the day, demographics decide. And our demographics are shifting from young, vigorous workers to more people like me, who should be retired but can't give it up yet. So we're going to have to be more productive. This is what's happening in Europe. It's happening in Japan. This is the big picture. And the big picture is wealth is a function of people working plus their productivity. Since we're not going to be increasing the number of people working, we're going to have to increase their capability through technology, through collaboration, through a better arrangement and training in the workforce. So I'd say that's the big picture. And that's why next year is going to be very, very challenging. And this year is going to be very challenging. Thank you very much.